Welcome to episode 33 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I am one of the co-founders here at ETR. As always, I am joined by fellow co-founder, the Lord of the Matchups column. It is, of course, Evan Silva. Evan, what's going on, buddy?
What's going on, man? What's going on? We're going to be talking a lot about preseason stars. So, you know, if we this week, because that's going to be a theme of this week. So if you played preseason DFS, you know, you're going to have a little bit of a leg up, I think, this week in some aspects and going forward. Coming off, I did not do well in Daily Fantasy in week 10. Played way too much Saquon Barkley, which we will discuss. Mm-hmm. We talk about the Giants. And Calvin Ridley, Falcons defense just came to play. Unbelievable. I had some theories as to why the Saints did not show up. And we will touch on that when we talk about the Saints.
Yeah, two interesting things there. Saquon Barkley's failure and what I thought was the most unexpected result of the season. And you know, not that the Saints lost, but just in the way that they lost and they couldn't protect Drew Brees and they couldn't get after Matt Ryan. Just really weird. But we're going to talk about all that. This episode 33, we will cover all the NFC teams, and it is free. Just a small sliver of all the content that we're putting out on a week-to-week basis. Episode 34 will cover the AFC and be behind the paywall. I wanted to let you guys know we are running a mid-season sale right now, 10 weeks in the books. We will go through the Super Bowl. If you're interested, use promo code MIDSEASON, all one word, MIDSEASON, for $85 off the full season package. That is access to every single thing that we're doing. The Friday show with Wiggins, the Sunday show with me and Evan, DFS Cash Pool article, Buy Low Model, Brandon Thorne stuff, everything through Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera. All right, enough business. With that, let's go ahead and get to the NFC. And we'll start with the Arizona Cardinals. And I saw some good things and some bad things. Good things was, despite Christian Kirk continuing to play outside, I mean, he just capitalized on all the opportunity he's been seeing all year. He was in the buy low model because he had not been producing despite a ton of opportunity in an offense that has really high pass volume, 8 snaps in the slot, 55 out wide. I'm not sure it matters when you're playing Tampa Bay and when you don't have much else at the receiver position. So I was happy to see Christian Kirk. I was happy to see Andy Isabella start to see his role grow, 18 routes on 46 dropbacks. I was unhappy to see, well, maybe not unhappy, but I was disappointed to see David Johnson get benched for Kenyon Drake. I mean, Kenyon Drake had more snaps, more routes, more targets, more carries. David Johnson was not in the slot or wide at all. I know I said a lot there, Evan, but there's a lot going on with the Arizona Cardinals. Now, let's start with the David Johnson thing, because I think that's what people need to know. Can we even play David Johnson right now? He looks like he's playing hurt. Kenyon Drake is playing better. Chase Edmonds is going to be back soon.
Well, I noticed how you just blatantly glossed over Larry Fitzgerald, first ballot Hall of Famer Larry Fitzgerald's 15.1 PPR points. You can't even say his name.
It's his ceiling. He played Tampa Bay and he found his ceiling, 15 points. There you go.
No, with David Johnson, I mean, he's going to be a tough sell as a play at all in week 11 against San Francisco, and then the Cardinals go on their bye, and Chase Edmonds should probably be back after that. I mean, I think it's fair to wonder at this point, David Johnson has struggled so much, and he's clearly not 100%. And I mean, the Cardinals coaching staff acknowledged that after this past game. If, you know, Chase Edmonds, when he comes back, is he a better option to be the number two back behind Kenyon Drake in this offense going forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's for sure a concern. And yeah, you know, we talk all the time, well, they should put this running back out wide. They should have David Johnson in the slot. Coaches just don't do that for whatever reason. I want to get your take on Andy Isabella, though. Should people be adding Andy Isabella? 39% of the snaps last week, did run 18 routes on 46 Kyler dropbacks. As I mentioned, I do want to say that with a lot of this stuff, with the Christian Kirk stuff, with Andy Isabella stuff, when you play Tampa, things are going to be inflated. This is the biggest funnel that we've ever seen, the biggest pass funnel that I can remember in so long. I mean, they're so good against the run, and they just cut Vernon Hargrave. Say they're so bad against the pass. So would you be adding Andy Isabella? Because I wouldn't feel great about starting him against San Francisco. And then, as you mentioned, they have the bye.
Well, I mean, his usage is trending upward consistently now. I mean, there are things that Andy Isabella does, like coaching staffs are not going to like the way he runs routes. You know, he catches the ball with his body, but the dude can make plays. And at the end of the day, you know, it's like It's like in Moneyball, who was the baseball player, Kevin Youkilis, like the, you know, the scouts hated the way that they hated his stance, and they hated the way that he swung and just how he carried himself in the box, but the dude got it done. And Andy Isabella led the entire nation in yards per route run as a senior at UMass. He was incredibly productive. He had something like 300 receiving yards against Georgia, you know, when they played a top echelon SEC team. So I think the guy just gets it done. And at some point, I think that the coaching staff is starting to realize this, that they don't need to hone in on all these different areas that, you know, that aren't aesthetically pleasing from Andy Isabella. The guy has big playability, and they need that in their offense, especially on the outside. And I think he's an outside receiver. You know, some people thought he was supposed to be Julian Edelman. You know, I thought the best comp for him was Brandon Cooks. And I think that's how they kind of need to use him going forward. And it looks like Christian Kirk and Andy Isabella could emerge here as their top two outside receivers. And then at that point, I mean, they have actual guys who can make plays on the outside, whereas early in the season, those guys were just decoys in Keyshawn Johnson and Damir Byrd and Trent Sherfield.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move to the Atlanta Falcons because we have a lot to talk about here as well. Austin Hooper goes down, and Austin Hooper is going to miss some time, it looks like. I mean, this is big. 7.4 targets per game, 18% target share, had a slot role. His direct backup, I believe, is Jaden Graham. And Jaden Graham is a guy that we considered in the preseason. I don't know if I ever ended up playing Jaden Graham. I may have on a couple slates, but Jaden Graham, I mean, tight ends do not produce in the preseason. He caught 12 balls in the preseason for 127 yards on 140 snaps. He is a move tight end. He plays the Austin Hooper kind of role. Luke Stocker, who is another one of Austin Hooper's backups, plays the blocker role. So I'm intrigued by Jaden Graham. I also think that Russell Gage gets a boost here with Austin Hooper out just for the slot snaps. And, you know, I keep waiting for Julio and Calvin Ridley to be unleashed, and perhaps this Austin Hooper injury will do it. And then we also need to talk about Devontae Freeman getting hurt and Brian Hill, another big time hashtag team preseason guy, stepping in. So give me your take on what's going on with Atlanta and the direct backups to Hooper and Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to see something from Jaden Graham. Comes out of Yale. I think that Luke Stocker is going to lead the team in tight end snaps, and then Jaden Graham will be a guy. They also might bring somebody else in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's definitely a possibility. At running back, you know, I've liked Brian Hill. I mean, he looked really good in the preseason. He's been a team preseason stud for a while. He's 6'1", 219. He's definitely competent in the receiving game. He was a big-time workhorse at Wyoming. I was just looking at the 2016 Wyoming Cowboys roster. They had 10 dudes that are now in the NFL. Jacob Hollister is one who's balling out right now for Seattle. Of course, Josh Allen was their quarterback. And Brian Hill was their feature back. And he had over 300 touches in each of his final two seasons at Wyoming, over 280 carries in both of them. So he's got a workhorse track record. He can catch the ball. He's big, and he faces the Panthers twice in the next 4 weeks. The Panthers have been getting destroyed by the run. 5.1 yards per carry allowed to RBs. They have given up 17 touchdowns to running backs in 9 games. That is just an absurd number. So Brian Hill, I think he's the number one waiver wire pickup of the week.
Yeah. And I was a little surprised that Quadri Allison was active in that game. And after Devontae Freeman got hurt, Quadri Allison didn't play at all. Kenyon Barner did get a few snaps, but it looks like they're pretty comfortable riding Brian Hill as a complete and utter lead back. So yeah, I think Brian Hill, you know, if you were saving your fab money or whatever, I think Brian Hill would be a guy that would be willing to blow your load on. Any problems with that, Evan?
No. I wish I still had some of my load left so I could blow it on him.
Well, yeah, we blew our load on Darius Slayton, which is great, but yeah. Our team is still dusted because we have David Johnson and George Kittle, so we're dusted. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm a little bit more optimistic on Jaden Graham than you, but I agree. I'd like to see how they're going to play it because obviously Luke Stocker playing a lot of snaps would not be ideal. If Luke Stocker does end up playing a lot of snaps, though, I really do think that it's a really big boost for Gage and Julio and Calvin Ridley just because, God, I mean, Luke Stocker's not going to catch very many balls. He's going to block. Okay, Let's go to the Carolina Panthers because they are playing Atlanta this week in what should be one of the higher scoring games of the entire week. One thing I noted was, you know, the usage. We've talked about it on a weekly basis. Greg Olsen's usage has been awesome, and his 8.98 line did not surprise me at all. Like the way he's being used, he's going to pop up for games like that. And the one thing that I wanted to bring up too, and shout out to Pat Corain, RotoViz Dynasty guy, you know, he made the note that Curtis Samuel is either about to explode or he's just not good, because his opportunity has been absolutely massive. He just has not been able to put it in the box score whatsoever. So I'm sure, I haven't seen the buy low model for this week yet. I'm sure Curtis Samuel will be in there again. This time he plays Atlanta. Do we have a take, Evan? Is Curtis Samuel about to explode, or is he just not good, or is Kyle Allen not throwing him enough catchable balls? What's going on?
Yeah, he's kind of like he's a littler dude who plays almost strictly on the outside. And sometimes he could just get like swallowed up for long stretches. Kyle Allen does not have a very good arm. You know, you watch Kyle Allen play, like he throws a lot of floaters. He can't like rip it to the far hash. And, you know, that's where Curtis Samuel runs so many of his routes. I wish that they gave him more run after catch opportunities in the middle of the field. But I like him this week. I mean, he leads the Panthers in 20-plus yard targets. He's got 19 targets of 20-plus yards downfield. The Falcons have given up the 11th most completions of 20-plus yards this year. So, absolutely, I think that Curtis Samuel is going to be a really strong play. DJ Moore has come on really strong, back-to-back 100-yard games. You know, we love to use wide receivers against this Falcon secondary. Greg Olsen is not dusted yet.
Nope.
He looked really, really good last week. I was watching that game live, and I was really impressed. I mean, he moved even better than I thought he would, because we haven't really seen him move a whole lot recently, because defenses have really been scheming to take him away. He really only had, one game over 50 yards over his previous three or four, and then he busted out. I mean, he was a machine. Late in that game, as the Panthers were trying to rally back, they were down by 8 in the fourth quarter, and it was just the DJ Moore and Greg Olsen show. And Greg Olsen dominated the middle of the field and down the sideline. So you love to see that. I think that this is going to be an opportunity against Atlanta. And I know that Atlanta played really well defensively in Week 10 against the Saints, and we'll talk about that more when we get to the Saints. But I think that this is an opportunity for the Panthers to really open it up and score a lot of points.
Agreed. Okay, the Chicago Bears, man, this is getting really concerning now. Like, bottomed out, like, no recovery from this kind of performance at home against the Lions with Matthew Stafford out. God, I mean, is there a difference between Mitchell Trubisky and, like, I don't know, Bortles or Ryan Finley? I don't even know at this point. Like, I've been giving Mitchell Trubisky, I think, too much leash and being optimistic on Allen Robinson in places where I shouldn't. I feel like this is the last straw, Evan, when you completely fail at home against the Lions. And they really easily could have lost that game. Like, they almost lost to Jeff Driskel. What'd you see out of the Bears?
Oh, I got Bears fans tweeting me that, you know, Mitch is back, man. He threw 3 touchdown passes, and, you know, he's ready to roll again. MVP Mitch, you know?
Yeah.
No, that's a really bad Lions defense. You know, they were given short fields. He only threw for, 173 yards or something like that. And now they're going to go on the road to face the Rams. The Rams are like, they've become a team who's like their strength is now their defense, because their offense has really been in shambles, and they just lost 2 offensive line. We'll talk about that when we get to them. The passing game outside of Allen Robinson, now Allen Robinson is probably going to have to deal with Jalen Ramsey. And Ramsey doesn't go in the slot, so, you know, there is some hope for Allen Robinson. But there's really not hope for any of the other Bears pass catchers. Taylor Gabriel has popped up for, you know, a decent game like twice this year. And beyond that, I mean, David Montgomery is the guy that, you know, you have to be concerned about, because – and the people here in Chicago think that it's a situation of Matt Nagy trying to jam his offense down the personnel's throat, as opposed to trying to work around the strengths and weaknesses of the offense itself. And that always becomes problematic when the coach is trying to force his scheme onto the players, as opposed to crafting around. I mean, Mitch Trubisky has some strengths. He's really athletic. he can run. I don't know why they don't run him anymore, but I think that that's like not Nagy's vision for him.
Yeah, and to me, probably a bigger concern was David Montgomery's performance because, God, I mean, you couldn't cherry pick a better spot, you know, with Jeff Driskel starting, with all the short fields that Evan mentioned, with the way the Lions have been struggling against the run, and Mike Davis gone, Ryan Nall doesn't even play, and David Montgomery still couldn't get anything done. That's major concern. Let's go to Dallas, who suffered a disappointing loss of their own this past week. I mean, Dak Prescott is just a straight baller, but Zeke could not get it going at all. I will say, you know, Zeke does now have 22 touches at least in four straight games, faces the Detroit Lions next. I'm not sure there's a lot to say about Dallas from a usage perspective. We know what they're doing at this point with their three wide receivers, with Witten, with Zeke. It kind of is what it is, and they face Detroit next. Do you see anything on Dallas on Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, it was clear the game plan that the Vikings set into motion against them, that they were just going to leave Harrison Smith as the eighth guy in the box all game, and they were going to make sure that Zeke did not beat them. And they dared Dak in the passing game to beat them, and they did, but the Cowboys' defense didn't hold up. And, I mean, they just got nothing from their running game whatsoever. Like, every single time they gave the ball to Zeke, it was a gift to the defense, essentially. You know, they averaged 2.4 yards per carry. Oh, this was one thing, and this was a stat from John Owning, who covers the Cowboys. The Cowboys in that game against the Vikings had 16 runs on first down. They had 14 passes on first down. When they ran the ball on first down, they averaged 2.4 yards per carry. When they passed the ball on first down, they averaged 8.3 yards per pass attempt. So all those 16 first down runs were just gifts to the defense. And there really wasn't much of an adjustment as the game progressed. I mean, late, they were still doing it, you know, late when they were trying to rally back for the win. So I think that they just straight up got out coached by Mike Zimmer through and through. And going forward, I mean, hopefully they'll make an adjustment, but they just believe so much. And I mean, they paid Zeke. They didn't pay Dak and Amari. They should have paid Dak and Amari and not paid Zeke and traded Zeke, or just let, you know, go roll with Tony Pollard or whatever. But they made that decision and they're like stubbornly sticking to it. But they do get to face Detroit this week and they should pound them.
Yep. Well, that's one big problem with paying your running back. Also, it's not just the money that you lost. You're now committed to running the football at such a high rate, and obviously that's less efficient. Okay, let's go to Detroit. We just mentioned that Matthew Stafford was hurt, obviously, in this past game, did not end up playing. So I think we can throw out a lot of what we saw from their offense. I have seen some people talking up J.D. McKissic as an add in season-long leagues. He did handle a huge portion of the snaps after Ty Johnson left with his concussion. I don't know. That all these Detroit running back things concern me because they have shown no interest whatsoever in committing to one. Obviously, J.D. McKissic is no superstar. We've talked about how he has a relationship with Daryl Bevel, but I don't think I'd be adding J.D. McKissic unless I was super desperate. What do you think?
Yeah, I probably would, man. I probably would. I mean, have you looked at his price on DK yet this week?
I haven't. I haven't looked at the slate at all.
Okay. I wonder what his price will be, because he does project, he does profile as a DK style player, right? So mm-hmm. If he's in the threes, we might be talking about him on Friday, right?
Oh, God.
Yeah, right. But I mean, he's like Theo Riddick, you know, he's very, very, very much like Theo Riddick. And I think that that's kind of the expectation that we should have from him. Now, Theo Riddick has had some big games in the past, and now he's going to be, J.D. McKissic is going to be facing Dallas, which gives up a ton of receiving production to opposing RBs. So, I mean, yeah, he's not sexy. You know, he's not going to be like a big-time bell cow, but I do think he's worth an ad.
Okay. Well, I'm going to see who they have available. You know, if they only have two running backs available, and I don't know what they're going to do, but, you know, they passed on Mike Davis, which surprised me a little bit. He ended up signing with Carolina, but yeah, we'll see what they have. And we'll see if Matthew Stafford is able to play too, because I think that makes a big, big difference. Let's go to the Green Bay Packers. And I just wanted to note on Aaron Jones. Like, I understand he's crushing, and believe me, I love Aaron Jones. Like, he's so good at football. And I get that he's getting a large portion of the touches close to the goal line, but man, you know, he continues to share snaps and touches right down the middle with Jamal Williams. And like, everybody just looks at the box score or the DK points or whatever, their fantasy points, and they're like, Aaron Jones was an awesome play. Like, dude had 13 touches, scored 3 touchdowns. So I'm hesitant to get excited to pay high salaries for Aaron Jones and continue to bet on touchdowns. That said, it's very clear they like him around the goal line. The other thing that I would note here is Devontae Adams clearly looks healthy. I mean, he could have had a huge game. Aaron Rodgers missed him on, I think it was like an 80-yard touchdown or something like that. So yeah, I was happy to see Devontae. And it looks like Alan Lazard has kind of emerged well ahead of MVS and is now the number two receiver. Anyways, what did you see with the Packers, Evan?
Yeah, and you know who really looked good in this game too is Jimmy Graham.
Oh.
I swear he will do this like once every 5 games, and it'll just be like, and then it'll just have 0 catches the next week. But he really looked good in this game. It was like a throwback game for him. Yeah, Aaron Jones is a guy that you can't really, you know, honestly project as more than, you know, like a fringe RB1, 2 going into a week. And then as you're watching the game or even just looking at the box score after the game, you're like, what the heck? You know, what this guy's like, you know, he finishes as the number one overall fantasy running back on the week, and he's doing it on, you know, such limited usage. And you're right. I mean, they, you know, for years under Mike McCarthy, the Packers were one of the most pass-heaviest teams. Warren Sharp wrote about this in his book each of the last 2 years. They were one of the pass-heaviest teams in the NFL around the goal line. Now, they're one of the run-heaviest teams in the NFL around the goal line. Aaron Jones is getting that. Jamal Williams has experienced that as well at times. But obviously, Aaron Jones has been the primary beneficiary. And this dude is just scoring touchdowns at a massive rate. But – yeah, I mean, when you are doing like an actual projection or setting an expectation, you know, I mean, you can't set the expectation, oh, well, this guy, you know, has, you know, this guy, like, we can project this guy for multiple touchdowns. You know, we have to project him on a usage basis, and then those touchdowns are coming, and it's really difficult to project.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I think a fade or sell high on Aaron Jones makes sense to me as long as Jamal Williams stays healthy. Let's go to the Los Angeles Rams. Man, I mean, this was an awful matchup for them. Let's get that out of the way first. You know, going to Pittsburgh, so good at rushing the passer. Offensive line, mess for the Rams. Goff so bad on the road, so bad under pressure. But, I mean, it keeps getting worse for the Rams. Now, Brandon Cooks has already been ruled out for week 11. They get the Bears and the Ravens next. This is bad for the Rams. I'm not sure they're going to come out of this offensively, as you mentioned. What do you think?
Yeah, see, I was going to project Jared Goff as potentially a sleeper play this week, but then he lost two of his starting offensive linemen, starting center Brian Allen and his starting right tackle Rob Havenstein. And that Khalil Mack mostly goes up against right tackles. So, and this team has no depth. I mean, this team spent a ton of money on Todd Gurley and Jared Goff. Both of those guys have pretty much stunk this year. They're like one of the top heaviest teams in the league. Their depth is just non-existent. And I think that they, you know, the Bears can go to the Rams and beat them this week, especially if they get pressure on Jared Goff, because Jared Goff, as you mentioned, one of the most pressure sensitive quarterbacks in the NFL. And now the odds of him facing increased pressure are enhanced by the loss of two starting offensive linemen. Oh, I should mention Gerald Everett maintained a really, really big role. I don't know. It still feels week to week in terms of how they're going to deploy him, but I do think he's one of their best 11, and they need to keep him out there.
Agreed. Let's go to the Minnesota Vikings, and I don't have a lot to say here. I mean, Dalvin Cook, another 33 touches for him. If it wasn't for Christian McCaffrey, we'd be talking about Dalvin Cook as just the nut fantasy player this year. I did notice, man, I like Irv Smith, you know. I think he has 17 catches over his last 4 games. And if Adam Thielen continues to miss, I think that's good news for Irv Smith. I'm not sure on Adam Thielen's status. They are home to Denver this week. What do you think about what's going on with Minnesota?
Yeah, so they are home to Denver this week. And then next week they have their bye. So I believe that we will see Adam Thielen sit out through the bye. That just seems to make the most sense to me. They also did this with Linval Joseph. They got him a knee scope, and it looks like they're targeting his return to be after the bye. Again, Kirk Cousins has been just absolutely balling. Over his last six, 71.5% completion rate, 9.2 yards per pass attempt, 15 touchdowns, one interception, 5-1 record, one turnover over his last six games. I thought that we might see him struggle against Dallas, and I thought that Dallas would be able to get more pressure on him, but he got the ball out quickly. They ran a ton of play action, and those are ways to counteract pass rush, and they did so successfully. Kyle Rudolph scoring touchdowns at an unsustainable rate relative to his targets and overall usage. And then Stephon Diggs has been kind of a disappointment. Dalvin Cook has just been destroying in the passing game with Adam Thielen out. Dalvin Cook has been the biggest beneficiary of Adam Thielen's absence, not Stephon Diggs. It has been Dalvin Cook. And then, as you mentioned, Irv Smith and Kyle Rudolph to some extent as well.
Yeah, would expect Steph Diggs to see a lot of Chris Harris on Sunday, but we can read Evan's matchups column for more on that. Let's go to the Saints. We talked a lot last week about how the workload would go between Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray. And these were all under the assumption that the Saints would win the game, the Saints would control the game, and I thought it'd be pretty close to even. Obviously, in game scripts where the Saints are losing for the entire freaking game, Alvin Kamara is going to be the guy. He outsnapped Latavius Murray 52-16. So regardless of game script, it was still good to see them lean on Kamara. Obviously, he was healthy. Now he plays Tampa, which obviously has one of the best rush defenses in the NFL. But it should still be a pass-centric game plan from Sean Payton. That should lead to more Kamara. Also noted, Jared Cook, 10 more targets. I mean, he's back. He's healthy as well. What did you see out of the Saints, and why do you think that they failed so miserably? I mean, absolutely shocking. They failed so miserably at home to the Falcons.
Well, Sean Payton got engaged to his longtime girlfriend on Friday night. And it was just a big, big party in the bayou until the game started. And then, you know, the party stopped, man. I think I've talked about this a couple of times. Hayden Winks, who writes for RotoWorld, Ross Tucker and I were having like this discussion one time on a Fantasy Feast podcast, and we were talking about like teams coming off of byes, and Ross talked about how sometimes it could be a bad thing. Like, we always innately think, oh, it's a good thing. They're rested. They're getting back their healthy dudes. Ross was like, you know, I've been on teams, and he played for like a lot of teams. He played for like five teams, I think. He was like, you know, for some teams, it was not a good thing because it got us out of our routine. We came out flat in our next game. And I was like, you know, if somebody would be willing to do like just a little study on this and see if, you know, there's any truth to, or just, you know, what are the results of teams coming off a bye? Hayden did it, or at least just for wide receivers, you know, he didn't do it for teams, but he noticed that for wide receivers, they tended to, like be at the very, very high end of their spectrum or very, very low end of their spectrum. And I could totally see how a team could experience the same. We saw that both the Falcons and the Saints were coming off their bye. So the Falcons played at the high end of their spectrum, at least defensively, and the Saints played at the low end of their spectrum, certainly offensively. And that was the result. And, you know, the Falcons like pretty much just kicked their butt. I don't think that that is indicative of what we should expect going forward. But I do think that it's, you know, when teams are coming off a bye, just something to note, it's not always a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, the most shocking thing to me was the trenches. I mean, God, Falcons defensive line and Saints offensive line and Saints defensive line, two of the biggest mismatches on the entire slate. Just can't believe that they weren't able to control the game. Really, really weird game. And I'm tempted to just completely throw it out, but man, I don't know. Maybe there's something to the bye week stuff. Maybe there's something to the Sean Payton team sex stuff, but I don't know. We'll see. Okay. Another mystery. Well, maybe not mystery. I mean, Saquon Barkley, 13 carries, one rush yard. Jets are second in rush defense, DVOA, on the year. That said, we noted how they had been missing. I mean, they made trades. They lost a bunch of their linebackers. Why do you think Saquon failed? Number one, Evan. And then number two, should people be adding Darius Slayton or should they be holding Darius Slayton? considering Giants have a bye, and then we could see Sterling Shepard back or not. It's kind of binary there, but what do you think about the Giants?
Yeah, but it's also been, you know, there have been some whispers that Sterling Shepard could go on IR, so
yeah.
I would definitely try to hold Darius Slayton through the bye. With Saquon Barkley, he has really, really struggled in pass protection. He's been really bad in pass protection, and what teams have tried to do recently is like to, whenever he's in the game, they will blitz the Giants to force him into blitz protection. Like in this last game, he pass blocked on 11 of his snaps. That's like a pretty big chunk of his snaps. And, you know, those are plays where he could be running a route and catching a pass. Instead, they are keeping him into to pass block. Also, they started to use Wayne Gallman a little bit in third down situations. So, I mean, the Giants are aware of it. Their opponents are aware of it. And I think it's just a funk. I remember watching Saquon Barkley at Penn State. He was an excellent pass blocking running back. No one really talked about his pass blocking last year. But I think it's probably just a temporary blip. The bigger question is, how healthy is he? Because, you know, we've seen good moments from him, but definitely not like as many good moments as, you know, we would expect. And he's running into crowds, and he's really not making guys miss, and, you know, he's not running guys over. And I mean, he's absolutely in a funk right now.
Speaking of team preseason, shout out to Daniel Jones, man, Danny Dimes. Now he has three separate 30 plus DK point games on the season. I mean, that's a lot. There's a lot of quarterbacks go through whole seasons, multiple seasons without getting to 30 DK points. So shout out to Danny Dimes. And he did it without Evan Ingram, did it without Sterling Shepard, et cetera, et cetera. So
imagine if the Giants were still playing Eli right now.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay, the Philadelphia Eagles, they're coming out of their bye. It is Patriots week for the Philadelphia Eagles. They didn't do what we said. They didn't go out and sign Rashad Ross, even though DeSean Jackson is out for the season. So, you know, they signed Jordan Matthews, which is just redundant on what they already have. You know, slow, inside type of guys. I don't know what their game plan is here against the Patriots. I assume it's to play Dallas Goedert a lot. I assume it's to try to run the ball a lot, because I don't think they're going to have success throwing it. But I don't see a lot of paths to the offense succeeding here for the Eagles. What do you think about them as they come out of their bye?
Yeah, they're like one of the slowest offenses in the league. Should have gotten Robbie. Should have gotten Chris Harris at the deadline, man. How he kind of whiffed a little bit. You know, I don't think I saw that there were some Eagles fans that were just pissed that they didn't get Jalen Ramsey, but the Rams gave up way too much for Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, around here in Philly, they say that Howie wants the team to get younger and therefore isn't looking to give up draft picks for assets like Chris Harris or Robbie right now, which I understand. But, you know, he kind of allowed the team to get older in the first place. So I don't know. I mean, they had a lot of eggs in DeSean Jackson's basket this year. Like, he makes such a difference. And obviously DeSean Jackson is older and was already injury prone. So, yeah, you could say Howie made some mistakes, but, you know, doing this team building thing is hashtag hard. So I'm still in Howie's camp, even though I don't even like the Eagles, but I still think Howie is a pretty sharp GM. But anyways,
yep. Continue. No, I totally agree with that. I'm also with you on, you know, what to expect in week 11 against the Patriots. I mean, I think we'll expect a lot of Jordan Howard. The Patriots have struggled to stop the run. I think we'll see a lot of throws into the middle of the field. That's a way that you can avoid Stephon Gilmore, you know. Throw the ball to Ertz. Throw the ball to Goddard. Throw the ball to Miles Sanders. You know, the Patriots don't have a lot of speed at linebacker. So you can test that with Miles Sanders and maybe with a little bit of Darren Sproles. I like the Eagles to pull out this win.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, this is another game where both teams are coming off their byes.
Yep. Okay, let's get to the San Francisco 49ers. And this was a wild game on Monday night. A lot of injury news. Manny Sanders left after like 24 snaps with a rib injury. I would consider him very questionable for week 11. And that kind of thrust Deebo Samuel into the spotlight. Deebo played 70 snaps. And, you know, Dante Pettis and Kendrick Bourne, I mean, they were awful. Marquise Goodwin barely played. And Deebo played really, really well. Deebo is going to be very popular on waiver wires. Deebo is going to be very popular in DFS. Why don't you give the people your scouting report on Deebo and how you think he will fare going forward?
Oh man, I love Debo. Love Debo. He was the third receiver drafted behind Marquise Brown and N'Keal Harry. Let me pull up my scouting report on him here. Yeah, he was hurt a lot early in his career. He had a bunch of hamstring injuries, broke his fibula at South Carolina, and then as a senior, he put everything together, 11 touchdowns, 14 yards per catch. He was first-team All-SEC, had 210 yards against the Clemson secondary. You know, talked a lot of, during the season-long lead-up to the year about receivers that have excellent return game track records in college, and that was Debo Samuel. He was first-team All-SEC as well as a return specialist. He had 4 kickoff returns for touchdowns, 93rd percentile spark, ran 4.48, 39-inch vertical. You saw it last night. Like, he kind of plays like a running back. He is just a violent runner, a little bit of Percy Harvin. My comparison for him was a cross between Percy Harvin and Golden Tate. Extremely physical after the catch. Kyle Shanahan has like manufactured touches for him. You know, and when you see Kyle Shanahan, a super smart offensive mind, being like, we have got to just find ways to get the ball in this dude's hands, that's a really good sign. Now he has a chance to be really unlocked if Emmanuel Sanders misses time, which it looks like he will. Debo Samuel will move all around. So if you're worried about Patrick Peterson, you know, stop it in week 11. Debo Samuel is going to be playing all over the formation. He can play outside. He can play in the backfield. He can play in the slot. Plus, Patrick Peterson hasn't played particularly well this season.
Yeah, and we'll also see on the status of George Kittle, because we don't know if he'll be back for this week against Arizona also, so certainly trending up big time for Debo Samuel. Also, another injury in the game last night for the 49ers, Matt Breida, who seems like he comes out of every game with an injury. This time, it's an ankle. We'll see on his status. I would note, though, man, that, like, you know, they aren't like, oh, Matt Breida got hurt, let's just saddle up Tevin Coleman. They want to give Raheem Mostert work. They don't want to just extend Tevin Coleman. So I can't project a huge role change for Tevin Coleman, but Matt Breida being out this week certainly couldn't hurt. Would you add Raheem Mostert, and would you add him over somebody like J.D. McKissic?
I don't know. I think that in PPR, in full PPR, I would rather have McKissic, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a tough call. Read Ryan Reynolds' waiver wire article. I'm glad I don't have to do that article. It's really legit difficult. I mean, we have multiple guys every week talking with Ryan, you, Taylor, Andrew. I mean, it's difficult to hash out, you know, exactly how to rank all these guys, and you know how to divvy up your fab and how much each guy is worth.
Sure. And I would say that one of the reasons that it's hard is because everybody's team is different, right? You don't know how desperate are you this week. Are you preparing for week 14, or are you really heavy at running back but light at wide receiver? Who else is on your squad? You know, and there's a lot of variables that go into the waiver wire stuff. So yeah, that's why it's hard to get context into it, and people should, the way I would use the waiver wire article is to look through all the options, consider how they fit with my personal team, and then make my own decision from there. So yeah, I think that you're right. It is really hard. I think that's one of the reasons that it's hard. I think I would prefer McKissic as well, but I'm going to need more information on Detroit's backfield before I say that for sure. All right, Seattle is going to their bye, so we won't spend a lot of time here, but unfortunately, Tyler Lockett, one of our boys here, had established the run. He got banged up. He was in the hospital. Sounds like he's not going to miss much time, if at all, though. Might be back after the bye. Josh Gordon played a bunch last night, was a non-factor. What'd you see out of Seattle in that kind of a wild overtime game?
Yeah, Jacob Hollister continues to be a factor as well. Yeah, in our main event team where we streamed him a week ago, I was like, man, maybe we should drop him. But, you know, good thing we did not drop him because he's looking like he's got a shot to be a producer down the stretch. As you said, they're going to be on their bye. I would try to hang on to Jacob Hollister. Josh Gordon did make a couple of key catches late in the game. So I think that his arrow is going to continue to point upward. I mean, they just got him, 7 days before the game. So the fact that he was out there pretty much at all is impressive. And then he made a couple of big first down catches in the fourth quarter that helped them win that game. So now he's got the bye to, you know, pick up the offense further. DK Metcalf continues to look like a beast out there. This offense is so, so much fun.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Well, first let's start with O.J. Howard, who came off of his injury, played on 82 of 83 snaps, and I guess more importantly, ran 47 routes on 55 Jameis Winston dropbacks. Now, he only saw a 15% target share, you know, and he was highly efficient on that 15% target share, but was that because he played Arizona? So I was excited to see O.J. Howard's usage, which was truly elite. I'm skeptical that he will be as efficient going forward, but he is a really talented guy with this kind of usage. It seems like it's trending up. Was this an Arizona-based thing, Evan, or is O.J. Howard back in our good graces?
Yes, that's a tough one to differentiate here. I mean, now he's going to be going up against the Saints, and the Saints have been really good against tight ends. They're really strong at safety. They're pretty athletic at linebacker. So this is going to be, you know, it's going to be like the total opposite of the matchup against Arizona. But I'm with you. Like, this was the best usage that O.J. Howard has seen all year. 47 routes run, 99% of the snaps. Mm-hmm. Seven targets. So I think that I would definitely consider starting him this week just because the tight end position is so, so weak. But I think it's still up in the air going forward. It's hard to say. He's got to play well. That really was his problem early in the season until he got hurt. He wasn't playing well. Now they give him the shot. They play him on almost every single snap in this game. He does play well. If he plays well again, I do think that he can finish off strong and be an asset for us late in the year.
Also with Tampa, Ronald Jones indeed started as Bruce Arians promised. But, you know, maybe it was because of the fumble partly, but Ronald Jones started off just white hot and then kind of cooled off in that game. He ended up only playing 46% of the snaps, handled 48% of the running back carries. The big change in his usage was something we'd never seen before from Ronald Jones, which was as a pass catcher, 24 routes run, 61% of the running back targets, like crazy. Like, there's no way you could project that kind of pass game usage for Ronald Jones. Do you think that's something that can continue for him? Because I do think that Peyton Barber and Aguna Wobbler are going to continue to cut into his rushing volume. So I want to be excited about Ronald Jones. I'm struggling to get there still, and maybe I'm just going to lag behind on this guy.
No, I think that you're probably in the correct camp. His one big like problem for him was that he fumbled on this untouched play in the fourth quarter, and then we didn't see him again. And it was Peyton Barber after that. Peyton Barber vultured a fourth quarter goal line score. Dari Ogunbowale is not going away, and now they're facing the Saints. So, you know, some of the stuff looks good on paper for Ronald Jones this past week, and he definitely paid fantasy dividends, but I think he's going to have a really tough go of it, especially after losing that fumble against New Orleans this week.
Yeah. All right. Last team in the NFC is the Washington Redskins. They'll come out of their bye, and, you know, we normally never talk about the Redskins, but on Friday we're going to have to talk about Terry McLaurin. I mean, he has a real chance to actually do something here against the just god-awful Jets corners. Anything on the Redskins coming out of their bye?
Yeah, Jets corners struggle with speed, and McLaurin is a blazer. So we're going to need that college shower narrative to step up with Dwayne Haskins and Terry McLaurin, because it has not been happening so far. Darius Geis is expected back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just not too excited. You know, probably sharing time with first ballot Hall of Famer Adrian Peterson, who, by the way, over his last four games, 5.1 yards per carry, 113 total yards per game. Hasn't even lost a step, man.
That's crazy. It's crazy. In that environment, for Adrian Peterson to be playing this well is crazy. All right. Thank you to everybody for listening. Remember that promo code is MIDSEASON if you are interested in $85 off the full season. So for Evan, for Jerry, for producer Luke, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.